I'm very pleased to welcome you to this dedication ceremony for the Charles E. Bunnell Memorial Building. The picture you're seeing on the screen was taken 38 years ago. These are the first six students who enrolled on opening day of the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines, September 18, 1922. This is Roden Day of Fairbanks, our first matriculant. Roden is no longer with us. He passed away in 1951, on the job, so to speak, at Ladfield, where he was an engineer in the power plant. His brother, Eddie Davis, is a well-known Fairbankson, and he's with us this afternoon. This is Earl Foster. We've not heard from Earl since 1956. At that time, he was in Los Angeles, where he was completing 25 years service with the Los Angeles City College.
This is Donald Allen Morgan speaking from Colorado Springs, where I am now located with a large concrete firm. As one of the original students at the university, I was quite closely associated with the late Dr. Bunnell. In fact, he taught me mining law. During our years of association, I watched him build from a single building and an idea, the university as you all see it now. Courage, determination, and iron will were essential ingredients of his character. But I like to remember him best, his infinite acts of kindness, as exemplified in his courtesy to all of us who were gathered around him at that time. When a student was low on funds, and who wasn't, somehow a job miraculously appeared to tide him over. If the laboratory needed certain equipment, or the engineering department was short traffic, funds seemed to appear in a magic manner to get these and many other supplies. As president emeritus, he kept up a careful correspondence with me. I feel quite proud to have these letters in my files. At least, after he had left us, I have some small part of this great man left to keep as a memory of him. I hope you will all feel, as I do, that this dedication today can only partially indicate the gratitude and reverence in which we all held our friend, Dr. Bunnell.
This is Ethel Bailey McMurray. It has been nearly 38 years since I first enrolled in the Father's North College, of which Dr. Charles E. Bunnell was its first president. I feel quite honored to have been one of its first students and to have this opportunity to take a part in the ceremonies of the dedication of the Bunnell Memorial Building. I feel proud to have such a great man as Dr. Bunnell for my English teacher in my freshman year. How I wish I could come back and see the changes made since the college first opened its doors and to reminisce with all my old college friends. I will never forget my Northland alma mater, and I'm proud that my name will go down in its college history.
Dear fellow students, this is Art Austin speaking. I consider us as students all our lives because I'm sure not one of us would claim he had closed his mind at any time during his life. And yet, when one considers the many groupings of society and their tendency towards smugness, maybe some of us have lost our curiosity. But we have more lessons to prepare today, so it would be better to begin. About the 1st of September, 1922, I got fired from a job driving a tractor for the Road Commission. Fine, thought I, I'll try college so that I would never feel that I had missed education completely. At that time, it seemed that the 2,000 or so people of Fairbanks depended largely upon a few federal checks to support the economy. People sold wood, groceries, and taught school, so that eventually those few checks reached a long way. Of course, a little gold mining helped too. Of the original six students, some of us had homes with food in them. The rest of us, and more who joined shortly after, had to mix work with fiancés with the faculty. President Bunnell, whom we called Judge because it was easier, did a marvelous job of finding work for us guys. It's hard to say students. Judge Bunnell was always handy with his checkbook, too, and helped many students with loans. I had two loans from the judge at one time, so that if I slighted the binomial theorem, I may have learned something of finance. At least I can claim I invented a wonderful sandwich of cold pancakes with a choice of oatmeal mush or raw cabbage leaves between the hot cakes. They usually drew suitable comments. I have very fond memories of the instructors at the college doing their utmost to teach me what they could. The wonderful hunting along the Valdez Road and in the mountains made those days something to remember forever. I do not recall any licenses to be bought in those years. The trip to the Alaskan range and the old Model T in the forest of caribou and mountain sheep was an adventure never to be forgotten. It is a pleasure to recall the geology classes and field trips and some wonderful dinners with the teachers. So after all those busy years, I am still glad that I was there when the college opened in 22 and that the phenomenal growth has made it a well-known university. I thank you.
I am Dorothy Ralph Loftus, one of the original six who registered for the first classes at the new Agricultural College and School of Mines. This was in 1972, and I had finished the Fairbanks High School of Houston in June. Like most of the other graduates, I had wanted to go outside the school, but there just wasn't money enough, so I climbed the hill and became one of that first group of six, the entire student body until a few others drifted in. I felt quite at home that first day because Judge Connell had been a close friend of our family for years. He and my father had been together in the courthouse when he was federal judge and my father the district attorney. It had been decided in family conclave that I should go just a half day and teach music the other half. The only music teacher in town had left on a prospecting trip up to Salt Jacket and had left me to carry on. Within a few months, my mother died and my father left for the outside, so these lessons furnished all the money that I had, and precious little it was too. This was before the time of welfare or other aid, and everyone was accustomed to manage things for himself. We walked to save 12.5 cents, which was the fare one way on the Tunerville Tunerville Trolley, which took us from the station to the bottom of College Hill. We didn't walk for exercise or for pleasure, but to actually save that small amount for something more vital to life and happiness, namely food. I carried mustard sandwiches buried with one silver chapter, because the 35-cent lunches were a luxury far beyond me. Of course, everyone was poor, so it didn't matter. Now, I suspect, even the professors carried the same shortage of funds. The warmest memories of those early days are the times Judge Linnell would drop a large handful of lunch tickets into my lap when I would be studying in the library. I cannot possibly tell you what those hot lunches meant to me. Hot soup, spaghetti, good beans made by Mrs. Sullivan were just out of this world, especially after my mother died, and a real meal was rather rare. I remember how Judge Linnell cried when he saw me into his office that morning and told me of my mother's death. Present bell. It is easier to say Judge, even after all these years, was like a father to the small group of us in those early days. He had enough worries running the college on almost no money, but he also had to worry about all of us, and well he might, for there were only one or two who had any help at all from home. As a parent of long standing, I cannot sympathize with him, but at that time we thought he was pretty cross and narrow-minded a lot of the time. I remember when he chivalried George Keyes when he married Miss Burrell, who was President Minnell's secretary. George was the engineer, and it was a real handy setup for courting. The morning after the wedding, the entire student body, I suppose there were 15 or so, counting short courses, grabbed any and all potential noisemakers and trooped downstairs to make an unholy racket in front of the newlywed group. Before we were well into the celebrating, downstairs came President Finnell in a towering rage. He was shaking so he could scarcely get out the hasty but well-chosen words to stand with us as only he could do. Odd, we thought, he should be so annoyed. We were using only a few minutes of class time. What a nuisance we must have been to a man bogged down with worries about appropriations from a reluctant legislature at a partially unfriendly board of regents. He liked to be with the groups which gathered around the piano in the gym and sang anything from "Yes, Hurry Up, My Baby" to the more sentimental "I Love You Truly." Sometimes he would bring down his trombone, which he dearly loved. I'm sure it had been much too long since he played in his college band, but in those days we weren't cheesy. You would find it everywhere. He janitored with the janitors, and when he might, for they were all students. He slept with the truckers. They said he counted every chunk of coal he delivered. He was practically secretary to his secretaries, to their great annoyance. He cheered at games, he had his finger in every cap of romance. Truly he was father to us all. We would rant and rail, never to his face, plot and correct it, just as all young do, but we loved and respected him at all times. It was a privilege to be at the birth of this university, and to have known all the wonderful people who were connected with it, especially Judge Connell.
Well, Those men were our first six students who were kind enough to make these cases part of and send them along to the occasion. A few days after, this was six students on opening day, remember. A few days later, Jack Hoffner arrived from Anchorage. Ted and Jewel Loftus arrived to join their brother Art. John and Bob McComb arrived. And finally, when registration was just about closing on October 10th, John S. Stanley arrived. John had 3 years of agricultural work at Cornell, and so they put him into his senior year, and the Alaska College had a graduate at the end of his first year. Stanley's doing all right. He's back in Buffalo, semi-retired after many years with the federal government, and he's running a tour service, a trip to the Caribbean. This picture is a picture of the college in 1922, the entire physical plant. I might mention here it included all the classrooms, the libraries, and the laboratories, and the power plant. Jack Sullivan, who's still in town, was our first engineer. And a picture occasion pictured here is the dedication ceremonies on September 13, 1922. And the speaker was the governor of Alaska, the Honorable Scott C. Bone. This is the picture of the college in 1924. You'll notice the east wing has been added to allow some more laboratory space for home economics, physiology, and medicine. We've taken quite a jump here because we don't want to take too much time. This is the campus in 1938. I'll make no verbal comments on it. You can just see the changes that have taken place. This is the campus in 1946, just about the end of the war, when after a military occupation, the Army turned the campus back to the university and in fact went into full-scale business again. This is the campus in 1953, about the time that Dr. Patty assumed president. Old Main is still the most prominent building. This was taken in 1957, and you can see already Wickersham Hall has gone up and quite a number of other changes. And finally, this was taken last fall, our campus in 1959. Probably the last air picture that you see with Old Main. These then were the early days, rather quick panorama of the growth through the years. We've shown you the first six students. They also had a faculty, six in number, very favorable ratio of 1-1. I think our first professor of mining and metallurgy is here today. Is Professor Earl R. Pilgrim here to take a bow? Professor Pilgrim. The second first faculty present will deliver the dedicatory address. First professor of geology and mineralogy, first dean of the college, the pioneer of his own right, president of the University of Alaska, Dr. Ernest M. Patton.
You know, this is a historic spot where we are today. 100 years ago, primitive man used the area beneath our feet as a campground. When we disturb the soil here, we find arrowheads and spear points and fragments which tell us that the hunters gathered here to fight their arrowheads while they scanned the valley floors and the sloughs looking for game. Near the opening of the present century, the whistle of the sternwheelers plying the Tananaw River reverberated through the forest, then covering this promontory. Prospectors backpacking their outfits to the diggings around Escadon must have skirted this hill as they attempted to dodge the swamplands of the flats. No doubt many have climbed up here to rest their path and get a look around the country. They saw, as we do today, the serrated peaks of the Alaska Range. And no doubt their eyes then turned to Yukon Highlands, and they searched and tried to guess where they could find another creek, peak that carried gold. And as they shouldered their pack, the smoke from the fire at the town of Skeena and Fairbanks must have been drifting up in the afternoon air. Within another year, some of the forest on this hill was cut down for cabin logs or for use in the steam plant for thawing the frozen ground. On March 4th, 1915, let's think of that, 1915, only a dozen years after Fairbanks became a recognized wolf camp, for 15 years after that, Delegate Wickersham maneuvered a bill through Congress authorizing the establishment of the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines. I have read his diary, where he describes the day-to-day struggle to overcome the objections and strong opposition in Congress. This diary records a dramatic series of events, with victory achieved only at the closing hour of the Congress. Events then moved very quickly. Just 3 months later, one bright June day in 1915, Judge and Mrs. Wickersham, Mrs. Lutherhead, for those these names I'm calling to the old-timers here, of course, a very familiar name, Mrs. Lutherhead, Reverend Hope Lumsden, and J. Groves were tramping around on this hill. They had starry dreams in their eyes, the establishment of a college in Alaska. What a wise selection they made for a campus. They stopped at a point just a few feet from the entrance door of this new village. Here was to be the site for the first cornerstone of their dream university. Delegate Wickersham said, "Mrs. Hess, please mark the exact spot where the cornerstone of the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines will be located." Here are Mrs. Hess's words. "So I broke off a small tree and tied my handkerchief to mark the spot. This seems to time such a little thing, but as the years have passed and our college has grown, I realize that a great honor was conferred upon me, as well as a privilege to have a part in the beginning of an institution which will mean more to our territory than any other by molding and directing the lives and characters of our young people, and in opening up to the miner, the farmer, the housewife, and the businessman the resource of this territory through the application of scientific means and methods, and by putting within reach of all the advantages of a college education. I thought then that it must be the most inspiring place for a college. I've thought so every time I've come there, and it is gratifying to know that almost every Alaskan and every tourist who's been on the college campus thinks and says the same thing. One pioneer has called it Inspiration Point." That ends the quotation from Mrs. Hester. The original idea, I'm told, was that the college would be located in Fairbanks, and the Ricketts Ranch at the corner of Gaffney and Noble Street was seriously considered. But Judge Wickersham would have none of this. He wanted the college to be in a community of its own. "But there isn't any water supply on that hill," they argued. After the campus site was selected, the Board of Trustees had plugged the record and said they appropriated some money. Well, they didn't have any money. I imagine the appropriation came out of their own pocket, because as far as I know, there was no territorial appropriation at that time. Anyway, they got some money some way and hired Mike Ersey, who still lives in Fairbanks and who was then prospecting nearby, to bring his prospecting drill to the hill. And the hole was drilled less than 100 feet from where we are today, at a depth of just about 100 feet beneath the surface. They struck crystal clear water. And then the hole continued on down to 149 feet, and then it was used for many years as the only water supply on the campus. Of course, with the finding of crystal clear and nice fine water, the decision was final that the campus would be here. Now then became the struggle of the territorial legislature. The territorial legislature in 1917 appropriated $60,000 for the construction of the first building. This was the center section of the old main building, which you saw on the screen a moment ago. and which serves until the first of this year and was torn down just a few weeks ago. The legislature did not appropriate any money for the operation of the college. They just appropriated the $50,000 for the building. The building was erected in 1918, that's 42 years ago. The territory really got its money worth out of that old village. It stood there as a ghost with boarded up windows for 4 years. The Board of Trustees requested a $40,000 appropriation from the 1919 legislature, but that was denied. They tried them up again 2 years later, and in 1921, they got a second appropriation of $41,000. Of this amount, $8,000 were earmarked for the erection of a cottage for the present, and the remainder to complete. Apparently, they didn't have enough money to complete the building first, to complete the building and add some furnishings. And I can assure you that there wasn't many furnishings added. This Patty and I first saw the campus September 1922 from the window of the narrow gauge railroad coach known as the Panama, part of the Panama Valley Railroad. It was just a lonely building standing starkly on a brush-covered hill, and certainly not an encouraging picture for a young couple who had traveled thousands of miles to join the faculty of this embryo college. And little did we realize then that our lives would have become so entwined on this campus. The building was almost unfurnished. There were just a few desks and chairs, and we laid boards over packing boxes to serve for laboratory tables. We worked feverishly to get the place ready for the opening day. Governor Bone, Colonel Mears, manager of the Alaska Railroad, and other important people were coming. The morning of September 13, 1922, Dr. Bunnell and I think all of the faculty were astride the roof line of the old main building, tugging on a rope to get the flight for us. It was just all we could do to make it. That afternoon, there were clouds of dust along the road as the Model T negotiated the uncertain roads between Fairbanks and the campus. Several hundred Fairbanks pioneers came out with physical means to observe the birth of this new idea. They stood in a group, you saw them in this picture, where you are today, standing just in the area. W.F. Thompson, the colorful editor of the Fairbanks News Miner, was here, and his paper carried banner headlines about the new college. He predicted a great life for the college, and he grew bold enough to editorialize that someday the road between Fairbanks and college would be paved, and it would be lined with homes, and children would be playing in the yard. What an impactful agreement. Didn't he realize that the only habitation along the road was a little dairy ranch about a mile or so out of town? Didn't he know that the gold fields were almost worked out, and that in just a few years, Fairbanks would be nothing more than just a fish camp on Phoenix Lake? He didn't. On that September day, 1922, the dedication ceremony was completed. The captain and the king departed. He was sort of lonely out here at the college there. Six faculty and six students, as you heard. What a feat. Although a few additional students came within the next few days, we weren't certain how long we were going to stay in business. We were dependent for salaries upon a $50,000 grant of federal money that came annually to all land-grant colleges. The authorities in Washington took rather a dim view. Of this young upstart school way up here on the frontier. They wanted to be certain that we were actually going to function before they released the money. There was a wait of several months before the check arrived. And what a great day that was for our creditors in Fairbanks. And I might add that we were then able to get off of grouse and rabbit diet. But it must have been inscribed upon the sands of destiny that this venture was going to succeed. The two of Alaska's great men were destined to bring it into being. Both were men of great vision and of great courage. Both men had served as federal judges in Alaska, and for a time they were bitter political opponents. In later years, it was their common interest in the university of, that bridged the deep canyon between them. Of course, you know that I'm talking about Judge Nickerson and Judge Bunnell. Charles E. Bunnell graduated from Bucknell College in 1900 and received his master's degree there in 1902. During 1925, he was called back to Bucknell University to receive an honorary doctorate. He and Mrs. Bunnell came to Kodiak as teachers on the Indian Service in 1900. Later, he was principal of the public school in Valdez for 4 years. Then he studied law and was admitted to the bar in 1908. President Wilson appointed him to the federal bench in 1915, and he served as federal judge of the 4th Judicial Division until 1921. He was appointed as the first president of the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines on August 11, 1921. And for the next 27 years, that's a long period of time in the life of a president. Until his retirement in 1949, he, with admirable skill, carried the college and later this university through the most trying times of its history. Commenting on Judge Bunnell's appointment, Mrs. Hess said, "It seemed that a great burden rolled off the Board of Trustees when Judge Bunnell accepted. It seemed most fortunate." It certainly was most fortunate. "During the first 13 years, I was privileged to stand at his side and share with him the pleasures that came as the college slowly advanced, and also to share with him the troubled days when hostile winds seemed on the verge of snuffing out the feeble flame that was burning here. I remember the heartbreaking letter that he wrote me in Juneau 1 year, but he was attempting to get the territorial legislature to make an appropriation to continue the college for another 2 years. The legislature would not permit him to appear before them to plead to the case of financial support. There were dark threats that it was a needless waste of territorial funds and the college could be closed. But in the end, he won. He had a habit of winning. For he had vision of the great University of Alaska, and those of us who are following in his footsteps are only trying to expand his dreams. It is one of the fine moments of my life that I have the honor and the privilege of dedicating this new village in memory of this great Alaska. It is satisfying, too, that his daughter Jean can be with us today. Jean, I remember when that we were trying to devise a motto for the university, and your mother came up with a suggestion of the word God Student to the height. Her suggestion was by far the best admitted, and it will live forever in the history of this university. Now, many minds have gone into the planning of the Bunnell Memorial Building that you're seeing today. Before the architects had put many lines on paper, our faculty and staff spent long hours planning for them to make this the most beautiful and functional building that our funds would permit. The cost of this building, as you see it, fully equipped, is $3 million. We have to remember that our construction costs in Fairbanks are just double what they are in Seattle. The Alaska Public Works supplied $1,348,000 from federal funds, and the cost to the state for this building was $1,625,000. This is a real investment for the future development of Alaska. 50 years from now, 2010, to be exact, this building should be in good serviceable use. It has been built with that idea in mind. During that period of years, many thousands of young men and women will study here in this building. And among them will be the future leaders of Alaska. There will be a selected few who will make contributions on the national or the world level. And who knows, now that we are a state, possibly a future president of the United States may be trained in this building. One of the things we can be certain, young men and women who study here will have their lives enriched and be given the opportunity of making a greater contribution to society. You know, we're not privy to the secrets of our life beyond the grave. I suppose that every single one of us sometime or other, have pondered the idea, that our spirits might be permitted to return a brief period to Earth. Certainly, with the spirits of James Bickerstaff, Carl D. Bunnell, Dr. Andrew Nerland, Mr. Luther Hess, J. E. McIntyre, Martin Stevens, I could go on, that's his name, just a few, are here today, and they are rejoicing with us as we celebrate another important milestone in the history of the University of Rhode Island. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Patty, for that very excellent address. We here today know that the name of Ernest N. Patty is inseparably linked with that of Charles E. Bunnell in the history of the university. Here from the capital city to participate in this dedication is a man we know very well. A native son of Valdez, a legislator of some 20 years standing, president of the Constitutional Convention when it met on campus in 1955, senator elect to Congress, suppressed successfully for statehood, our state highest official, the Honorable William A. Egan, governor of Alaska.
Thank you, Dean Patty, Dr. Patty, Mr. Kennedy, Mr. Fitzgerald, members of the Board of Regents, ladies and gentlemen. I will have to confess that somewhere along the line, some wires became crossed, and if you detect in my remarks anything that is repetitious with what Dr. Patty has already spoken to us about, it will only go to prove that Dr. Patty and me, in doing our research, divulged the identical facts. But at any rate, we are here today to dedicate what I like to think of as the prized jewel in the crown of buildings which in the last 10 years have grown to adorn the crest of College Hill. It is altogether fitting and proper that this fine structure will be known as Bunnell Memorial Hall in honor of the first president of this institution, Dr. Charles E. Bunnell. At least three times in the past 38 years, dedicatory services have been held here, each occasion marking a milestone in the history of the University of Alaska. We stand close to the spot, as Dr. Patty has told us, where in June of 1912, a small group of Alaskans, which included Delegate James Wickerstaff and Mrs. Luther C. Hess, rested for a moment in their search for a site for the future Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines. Even though a formal dedication was held a few days after Mrs. Hess made her memorable remark, I feel there could be no more appropriate dedication than for a group of Alaska pioneers to mark in this truly pioneer way the site for the first building of Alaska's first institution of higher learning. Now, these were the remarks of Mr. Hess. On the 13th of September, 9 years later, the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines was here formally dedicated, and its doors opened for an initial enrollment of the six students whose pictures we have seen today. In the meantime, the Board of Trustees had selected the executive head of the institution. Mrs. Hess, who by this time had been named one of the initial trustees of the Embroiled College and an eyewitness account. That officer, the president, wrote Mrs. Hess, would mean more to the college during its first few years than at any other time. His responsibilities would be greater. Upon him would depend to a great extent the whole organization and policy of the institution. Above all, he must be a good businessman, for funds were limited, and every dollar spent must bring a dollar's worth of return or more, if possible. The name of Dr. Charles E. Bunnell was presented. He seemed to have all those qualifications which could successfully initiate the work at the college. He had the necessary scholarship, had been a scholar, a teacher, a lawyer, and for 7 years, judge of the district court in the Fourth Division. He was known to be a tireless worker, a good businessman, and had wide acquaintance over the territory. I have at times wondered whether Dr. Bunnell, or the judge, as he was affectionately termed, would have assumed the responsibility to head the college had he known the lean and hungry years which lay ahead for that institution. I feel he would have accepted the challenge. He was a fighter, as those of us who served in the legislature during his tenure as president of the university know full well. And he had a worthwhile cause for which to fight. He was persuasive, as the Finance Committee soon found out, and invariably came home with the bacon in the form of an appropriation, though there might be precious little fat on it. In other words, he measured up to the trustee's stipulation that he must be a good businessman by running the college on the modest sums wrung every 2 years from economy-minded legislature. William James, the American philosopher, once said, "The great use of a life is to spend it for something that outlasts it." By that standard, Dr. Bunnell's life was an outstanding success. From the minute that Dr. Bunnell assumed the presidency of the college, he lived for it. The remainder of his life was irrevocably wedded to the promotion of the growth and success of the territory's only institution of higher learning. On the initial issue of the Farthest North Collegium, Dr. Bunnell clearly sets forth the goal to which he hoped to lead the college. "The business of this institution is education," he wrote. "The scope and nature of its existence depend upon those who are privileged to direct its policy. Its measure of success will be the service it can render to those who seek both education and culture, and who are willing to pay the price necessary to secure these accomplishments. Education is possible without culture, but the product has no soul. Culture needs education to extend the scope of its usefulness." These are not the visionary remarks of a dreamer. Rather, they reflect the practical thinking of the good businessman, which those who chose him knew Dr. Bunnell to be. He also said, "There is no mystery connected with this business of education. No enchantment either surrounds it or enters into it. It is for the four-year student, just what it is for the short course student. And that is natural ability plus work." I detect in another statement of the judge a guiding philosophy which must have served him well during his trying years of leadership. He said, "The courage of one's conviction does not mean the courage to follow, to preach, or fancy, but the courage to carry out a determination based upon the result of honest reasoning. True work, well-directed effort, and honesty of purpose are the dimensions by which the content of your usefulness will be measured." Another yardstick defined. Through the years, Dr. Bunnell lived up to it. The Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines, which in 1935 became the University of Alaska, was authorized by the action of the Fourth Territorial Legislature in 1917. Congress had, on March 4, 1915, at the urging of Delegate Wickerstam, approved of the establishment of a land-grant college in Alaska. In the territorial legislature, companion bills were introduced in the House and the Senate. Both were authored by 4th Division legislators. Delegate Dan Sutherland, afterwards Alaska's delegate to Congress for several terms, introduced the Senate version. Another equally well-known and respected Alaskan, Andrew Nerland, presented a similar bill in the House of Representatives. Nerland later served for many years as a trustee of the college and regent for the university. As one who served with him in several sessions of the legislature, I can testify to his devotion and loyalty to the university and many other worthy causes during the years which followed. Today, his son Leslie serves as regent for this institution. There are many of us here who may not be aware of the narrow margin by which the college gained legislative approval. The House version was bottled up in committee, and the Senate finally passed its version by a 7-1 vote and sent it on to the House, where it was referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. That committee, by a 4-4 vote, brought in a recommendation that the matter be referred to the voters of Alaska for a referendum vote. No action was taken on this recommendation. Finally, the measure passed the House by the narrowest of margins, 9-7. On May 3, 1917, Governor Strong signed the measure into law with a strong reservation, believing that the action was, quote, premature. The bill carried an authorization for $60,000 for the construction and furnishing of a building to house the newly created body. Thus was born the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines. The years which were to follow, formative ones for the new college, no doubt taxed the patience of Dr. Pinnell many a time as he faced indifferent and near hostile legislators. Several years passed before funds were reluctantly voted for him in the dormitory. If Dr. Pinnell had not lived up to the expectations of the trustees with regard to ability to get a dollar's worth or more for every dollar available, the college might have died in infancy. Instead, gradually increasing enrollment in graduates who proved their worth in chosen fields were convincing arguments that the institution was a worthy one. Finally, when World War II reversed the prevailing philosophy that Alaska was a land in which to labor, make money, and leave, more legislators gave added support to the university. But it was during the lean years that Dr. Pinnell proved his worth, and at the same time made those enduring friendships which have prevailed to this day. His assistance, financial and otherwise, to students he considered worthy were many but unpublicized. I have reviewed the college and university appropriations which legislatures voted through the years from 1917 to the present. During the first 30 years of its existence, from 1917 through 1947, the legislature approved university appropriations totaling slightly more than $3 million. This covers all authorizations for new construction, maintenance, and staffing. Immediately after World War II, a feeling of stability and permanence permeated Alaska. Legislators adopted a more liberal attitude toward those public services such as health, education, and welfare. As a result, the university benefited. From 1947 to the present, the legislature has appropriated more than $20 million for the university, and in 1957 has also authorized a bond issue in excess of $1,800,000 for construction to be redeemed by annual appropriations from the general fund. By this measure, the institution was able to enter into a long-range continuing program for the improvement of its physical plant, an expansion which came none too soon to take care of a rapidly growing enrollment. This fall, the voters of Alaska will act on an additional bond issue of $2 million for further construction. From an enlightened legislative philosophy and loosened purse strings has come the means to finance the modern new buildings which now crown College Hill. The network of paved streets and sidewalks which tie them together, and the beautiful landscaping which surrounds them. From a humble beginning, a great institution has arisen. Like so many leaders of the great cause, Dr. Bunnell was not privileged to witness the final achievement of his inspired dreams and efforts. Elderly and feeble by hard work and ill health, Dr. Bunnell retired from active leadership of the university on July 1st, 1949, to become president emeritus. But like a pioneer scanning a broader horizon, as from a great height, Dr. Bunnell, before his passing, glimpsed the greatly enhanced position which his beloved institution would occupy in the near future. Events which portended the new concept were at hand. In 1949, for example, for the first time, appropriations from the for the university topped the $1 million mark. Indeed, they exceeded $2 million. Since then, two biennial appropriations have gone over the $3 million point, each greater than total appropriations for the first 20 years of the institution's existence. This year, the legislature appropriated more than $2.5 million for a single year. All this has enabled a rapidly growing physical plant to rise with dramatic impact on the university campus. Modern steel, glass, and concrete structures have replaced the modest frame buildings which once marked this site. It is particularly appropriate that this four-story concrete structure, which will house classrooms, laboratories, administrative offices, and a lecture hall and a library, are to be named in honor of Dr. Bunnell. There is no doubt but that there were many times during his years of stewardship when he paused to gaze to the south over the broad Panama Valley to majestic McKinley. His plans for this institution were as broad as that valley and as lofty as that mountain. His leadership brought the university through its difficult early years. His example has served as an inspiration for those who have already followed in his footsteps. Future travelers of the same trail may well emulate his example. Dr. Patty, who was a member of the original faculty for the college and the first dean of the School of Mines, is now retiring head of the university. He has said, "We cannot have a state without a great university. A really great university is expected to do more than just teach the students who come to the campus, although that is its primary function. It must touch the lives of all citizens through its research, off-campus courses, and programs. The leadership exerted in advancing the development of Alaska and a host of other activities. We have made a good start in this direction, but we are not complacent, for we realize that we are not yet fulfilling all of our obligations." The destiny of Alaska and university were closely entwined when the Constitution for the future state of Alaska was drafted on this campus in newly completed Constitution Hall during the winters of 1955-56. And it must have been a matter of pride and satisfaction to those who loved the university that among the framers of that document were graduates of this institution. Certainly, it was symbolic of the part the university and its graduates will play in charting our state's development during the years which lie ahead. It is a relationship which will grow with time. Already, one of the chief and most important departments of state government is headed by a graduate of this institution, while others are playing lesser but nevertheless impressive roles. The University of Alaska is now part of everyday life in just about every community in Alaska. Its extension services, its mining short courses, and most particularly its community college program have served to shorten the geographic distances between this campus and the far reaches of our great state. Summer sessions, mining extension, mining and geophysical courses, the Geophysical Institute, the Cooperative Wildlife Unit, participation in the National Science Foundation, have all served to add to the prestige and usefulness of this great institution. Most particularly, the Agricultural Research and Cooperation Extension programs are filling a vital need in the state's social and economic development, while economic studies looking towards the enhancement of business and industry in our state will surely have an important part to play in determining our state's destiny. 38 years ago, Dr. Bunnell defined the measure of success for this institution as the service it can render to those who seek both education and culture, and who are willing to pay the price necessary to secure these accomplishments. I find a singleness of purpose between these words and those of Dr. Patton, who in a recent report to the Board of Regents reviewed the outstanding work accomplished by the university in the divisions of business administration, education, home economics, and natural resources. Then he went on to say, to avoid the dangers inherent in attempting to become all things to all men, your university plans to concentrate as much as possible upon programs of instruction and research that it is best fitted to do and that will best meet the needs of the state of Alaska. Dr. Patty's affirmation of the objectives of the university indicates to me that while experiencing a period of unprecedented expansion and growth, both in physical plant, enrollment, and academic subjects, the university has kept its feet on the ground, figuratively speaking. This institution has served well the cultural and educational needs of a pioneer and growing state. Its leaders have shown wisdom and judgment in well-planned expansion to keep pace with Alaska's growth. I have every confidence this wise course will prevail in the future. By so doing, the university will maintain its lofty position as an object of pride to all Alaskans and will remain that something which outlasts the great life which shapes its destiny. It is with its closing thought that this building is dedicated here today in the memory of Dr. Charles E. Bunnell. Today we see fulfillment of a plan. Born in obscurity, but fathered by a man. Devoted to a cause of betterment and learning, with a purpose and design to satisfy that yearning. This tribute we pay today to Dr. Bunnell. He served his country faithfully and well. Thank you.